It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine. That's great, it starts with an earthquake, birds, snakes, and aeroplanes. Many brutes are not afraid. I have a freaking listen to yourself, third world, but there's no need. Something in your own head, beat it up, and I've got no suits. The ladder from the clatter with the fear of fight down. I fly out in a fire, resistance of the gang, the government for hiring the combat site. But you wasn't coming in a hurry, leave the fury down your neck. Mexican border trap the Trump, pay the crowd, look at that low plane, flying then. Upfall, overfall, 5 minutes, corner, two, but it'll lose. Secret devil, spirit devil, world, in your own need. See your heart, show me that the river in the river was the right. You patriotic, patriotic, land, might, right, my feeling is pretty tight.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it.
Welcome to the Doom and Bloom Hour with medical preparedness experts Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, your source for information on how to succeed if everything else fails. And now, your hosts, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy.
The novelty alternative tonight, decline. It's the end of the world as we know it.
This is the hour of doom.
I'd like to say in bloom, but I'm a little under the weather.
You are a little bit under the weather. You've got
so how about
a cold,
if I say,
you poor thing.
Yeah, I know. It's okay. Life sometimes gets you down, but that's all right. I'll get right back up. But it is also the hour of bloom.
Of bloom. Yes. The hour of phlegm. Or something.
Oh,
I don't know.
That's disgusting.
Hey, friends and neighbors, welcome to the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Hour, a raucous round of righteousness in an unruly world. I'm Joe Alden, MD, also known as Dr. Bones of doomandbloom.net, where you'll find over 900 posts, videos, podcasts, all sorts of good stuff on medical preparedness for any disaster.
I'm very upset with you.
Why?
Because it's not 1,000 yet.
Oh, no, it is almost 1,000.
Yeah, how close are you?
I'm 960-something.
Ooh.
Yeah,
all right, well, folks,
man.
You need to send your topics in, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
Uh-oh.
I am Nurse Amy, actually known as Amy Alton. I am an advanced registered nurse practitioner and a certified nurse midwife.
And the hostess with the mostess, a ARMP, a CNM. Oh, you have all sorts of crazy
MSN.
Initials after your name.
MSN.
MSN.
Master of Science in Nursing.
Oh, right. So you have, wow. You
and
are,
I have and a BSN, but the MSN surpasses that, so
that.
You don't
wow.
say that anymore.
Well, how about that?
And at one point, I was an RN, registered nurse. Before that, while I was in school, they let us become an LPN.
Right.
So I was a licensed practical
just moved
nurse.
Right along there.
And before
you?
That, after my second year of nursing school, because there were 4 years, they actually let us become nursing assistants. So I worked in a hospital as a nursing assistant. So I've been a jack of trades.
You've done everything.
And I worked in central supply, I think it was called resource, CSR it was, where we sterilized all the instruments and picked up all the old equipment and washed it down and cleaned it down and sterilized stuff.
Well, there are very few places that you haven't been in the hospital. I'll say that much.
I'd like to say I wasn't a janitor, but I'll tell you what. LPNs and RNs might as well be janitors, too, because we cleaned up a lot of floors and beds and stretchers and emptied out trash. And
well, it can get pretty messy.
So we did everything.
Yes, indeed. Wow. Well, I am very proud of all of you have accomplished, and I'm very proud to have you as my co-host.
No, you just want.
We are indeed a perfect pair.
Aw. No, you just married me so I could be your nurse in your old,
in
old
my
age.
My old age? You mean today? Yesterday?
No.
Last
no.
week? Yep. Well, folks, we are here with a special mission. That mission is to put a medically prepared person in every family for any disaster. And we're here to help you keep it together, even if everything else falls apart. Friends and neighbors, have you been injured in an accident with a vituperous viper? Oh, my goodness. Our attorney says, don't call me. Call Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy. And listen to this.
All information given and opinions voiced on Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy's Survival Medicine Hour are for entertainment purposes only and do not represent medical advice for anything other than post-apocalyptic settings. No contract or provider-patient relationship exists or is implied between the hosts and listeners. Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy strongly urge their audience to seek modern and standard medical care whenever and wherever it is available. Well, you know, it's hard to say all that when you can't breathe through your nose.
I know. Well,
I went through it just a week before. Pre-recorded.
Uh-huh.
Oh, anybody listening knows I've asked for that previously. He just likes me to say it over
I like
and over.
You to say it because you mess it up sometimes. Lots of fun.
And you get a good laugh.
Yeah, well, I mess up much more than you do, so.
Oh, it's okay, darling. It's the content, not necessarily the delivery.
Well, that's true. Hey, you know, it's important to seek modern and standard medical care when it's available. But when the ambulance isn't just around the corner, what you got to do? Call Ghostbusters? I think not. Well, you know, in a major disaster, you just might be the end of the line when it comes to your family's health. So use some of those brain cells that the good Lord gave you and learn what to do for injuries and illness in a disaster. What a great way to display your intelligence, your common sense, and by the way, your supplies, if you happen to get some, you should have a solid medical kit in your storage. And what better place to get it than Nurse Amy's entire line of often imitated, never equaled medical kits at store.doomandbloom.net.
Well, I just want to tell folks there's a few new things in the store. One, I've put up a box of scalpels. You can get a full box of 10 scalpels, which are number 10. So get 10 number 10s.
Those are the best for incising and draining abscesses and things like that.
Right. I also now offer an option of any kit that has a soft T tourniquet in it to check off a box while you're ordering if you would prefer to have a combat application tourniquet or called a CAT.
A Gen 7 CAT.
The newest, latest, single buckle routing, gray time. And by the way, these are from North American Rescue.
The real thing.
They are real. I'm actually having a conversation with the manufacturer who is in South Carolina about some of these other tourniquets that I've found at shows and actually in other kits that they're hinting to me that aren't real, but they want some more pictures. So I took some more pictures of a couple of them that I found at some of these expos, and I purchased them so I could find out, are these the real deal or not? So I'm getting a definitive 100% answer. Actually, there's two different ones. They both have a picture of a jumping cat on them.
That's not what cat
Which
means.
The actual ones, the real ones with the tight plastic package and the Gen 7s do not have a jumping cat on them. So I'm going to get an answer back from them. So this will be very interesting. They should have been able to tell from the front picture because the instruction page that's inside has the leaping cat, whereas the ones from North American Rescue do not have a cat or any kind of jumping animal of any sorts on their paper. So,
well, anyway, as you can see, Nurse Amy
I think
is
all
pretty
actually afraid to tell me.
Feels pretty strongly about getting
the real deal.
That's right. And nope. And sure, absolutely. I mean, our kits are designed by indeed the real deal doctor and a real deal advanced registered nurse practitioner. We believe that if you compare them for contents, quality, and cost with anybody else's stuff, you'll agree they're the kit that you should have in your medical storage. Check them out at store.doomandbloom.net.
And there's one other small item that I also put up. You know, guys, I try not to be Walmart. I mean, I have everything that you see in all of my kits. If there is something you can't find elsewhere and you want to ask me for a price, please feel free to email me at DR, that's DR like doctor, Bones, B-O-N-E-S, podcast, which is what you're listening to, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, at AOL.com. So I can provide you a price if you want 20 of something or 10 of something, it doesn't matter. I'll give you the best price I possibly can. But another item that's now on the store, it's a little thing, but you never know, 4 12cc curved tip syringes. Those are included in my dental kit, and they're excellent for irrigating wounds and also irrigating the hole that's left when you have removed a tooth. So that,
yes.
That's why it's included in the dental kit.
Excellent dental supply. Yeah.
For rinsing out. So a couple new things on the store. And, of course, now the option for a cat tourniquet. Newest, latest. They're brand new. I just got them.
Well, that makes a lot of sense because a lot of people are aware of the cat tourniquet or may have used it in the military.
They train. They like it.
Or, right.
You know?
Exactly. And they may want that instead of the softy. Although they are pretty similar, but still there are some differences. So I think that is a great option for people.
Oh, and I have the holders. I'm not sure that I mentioned that from a company called, I think it's 1110.
Right. If you want to carry
1110, they're solid holders. They're not vinyl or nylon.
Or plastic.
They're hard, thick plastic with it's called Tech Lock. So it actually locks onto your belt or a loop of Molly if you want. And you can pull them right out. There's no top on them, so they're just open. You can just one-handed pull them out. And if you set them up right when you pack it in there, they'll open up for your loop and you can self-apply for yourself. I have one for a cat and I have a separate one for the soft tee.
So a great one to carry.
Really cool looking.
If you're at an at-risk situation, you want to carry a tourniquet right on you that you can get out quickly.
Or put on the outside of a kit that you have too.
Oh, that's true.
And you have
true.
Molly, you can attach it. So they're black, but they have a really cool orange cross on them. So it screams out, I'm a first aid supply.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. Well, you're just moving right along.
I'm trying, you know. I find cool stuff, and I don't know. I love medical supplies. I know it sounds crazy, but I just love them. I love walking into my warehouse. I love having them at home. I keep so much at home. Joe, Dr. Bones here, always says, why do we have so much of this here? I'm like, well, just in case. Okay, guys, my warehouse is 5 minutes away, but you just never know. I might need all of this.
Now, if you would like to contact Nurse Amy and tell her how nuts she is. Here she is. Here she is to let you know how you can connect
with
us.
Well, I already told you guys the email. Again, that's drbonespodcast@aol.com. You can find us on Facebook at our Survival Medicine Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy.
Group,
we have that's a Facebook group. We have a couple of pages. Doom and Bloom is one of them. The other one is Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy Show. We have a personal Facebook, which is under your name, Joe Alton.
Sure, friend me anytime.
MD. And let's see what else we got. I think that's all for Facebook. Twitter, we have at Prepper Show. By the way, folks, if you haven't subscribed to Twitter, I am now once or twice a day, as long as I'm not like on my deathbed here, tweeting out some, how would you say it? Helpful hints.
We'll helpful just, hints.
Helpful health hints.
Amy's helpful hints.
Households hints.
Nurse Amy's helpful household
and tips.
Tips and tricks.
What are you doing?
I'm trying to think of something that's catchy.
Tips and tricks.
Yeah.
For uses of everyday items.
All right.
All kinds of like just cool little things that I find.
All right. Well, that sounds good. So that you'll find that on Twitter.
Twitter at Prepper Show.
Right. And don't forget our YouTube channel at DR Bones Nurse Amy. And, of course, we have another podcast besides this one. That is called American Survival Radio. It is indeed syndicated to a number of radio stations, including KPJC, Relevant News Talk Radio out of Salem, Oregon, KRFE, Lubbock, Texas, KFAR, Fairbanks, Alaska. So we hope that if you live in those areas that you'll certainly check in. And also you'll find us at Genesis Communications Network Live.com. That's GCN Live.com. Which is the home of a lot of great shows, actually, not just
ours.
Yeah,
they do have a lot of good shows.
But you'll find our show is called the American Survival Radio Hour. Now, the important thing is that you need to know that we are not just here on the airwaves, that we travel to where you are.
Boy, do we travel.
We're going to be everywhere from Vermont to Oregon this year, Texas and North Carolina, so much more.
Ohio.
Please
come. We'll be
doing
a show in Ohio at the end of June.
End of June. We'll be in Ohio. So we're going to be all over the country, Midwest, Southeast,
Do you want me to mention Northeast, any of the shows specifically?
West? No, I think we're about 3 or 4 weeks away, so we'll wait till then. But we have quite a few of them, and we'll do classes, free classes. We'll do hands-on classes. We'll do all sorts of great stuff.
And today, by the way, is, what, March 31st?
First, uh-huh.
Well, where does the time go?
It really goes.
I'm going to have to play a trick on you tomorrow.
Why is that?
Because tomorrow's April 1st.
Ah. Very interesting. So I'll have to think about that. Well, speaking of a trick.
Oh, wait. I just got a message. This is very important.
Okay.
From my manager at the warehouse. Our internet's been down for a couple of days there. He says, the AT&T robot voice said there is a network outage in the area due to aliens touching down and using their force fields to corrupt the Wi-Fi networks of Broward and Dade County.
I knew it.
The MIB is in negotiation with our foreign friends right now, but it doesn't look like the issue is going to be resolved until tomorrow, April 1st, at 3:02 p.m.
Oh.
I'm not kidding, folks. I just got this text. You know what? He's a lot like you. I have a lot of Joes in my life. His name is Joe.
Also,
the one next to me is Joe.
Amazing. Hey, speaking of tricks, I want to talk a little bit about a trick that I think is being played on not only the public, but also, honestly, on our military. And that trick is this medical supply, this medical hemostatic agent called Xtat. And this Xtat, if you haven't heard of it, is a syringe full of these small sponges, 92 or 93 of them, I forget which, that expand in the body. You inject it into small diameter bullet wounds that are bleeding and supposedly very helpful to stop bleeding there. And the thing is that a lot of people are talking about them in the survival community, but I'm looking at these things and they're not only are they prescription only, but they're also extraordinarily expensive. How much you priced that out a while ago, Xtat?
Oh boy, it was over $430. I think it was like $438,
$439.
Each per syringe.
Wow, that is amazing. Well, you know, and more amazing is that what is the thing that stops the bleeding there?
Celox.
Right. Celox.
Each one of those little sponges, 92 of them, are all covered in Celox.
Which is what we use in our kits.
Exactly, which is really funny because you can read websites in their main website about Xtat and read and read and read. And it's very hard to find exactly when they admit to having them covered with chitosan, which is Celox.
Wow.
It's in fine print. They talk about the 92 sponges. They talk about the 92 sponges expanding, which helps to stop bleeding. But seriously, you might as well use Celox or even QuikClot for that matter because, oh boy, is it cheaper.
Wow.
Did you really want to get me started on this Xtat?
No, not too much. I just wanted to mention that I think it is a little bit of a
Hooey
thing because
government sponsored.
We might mention, right? The Department
government
of Defense,
funded.
Right? Exactly, is paying for these $430 Xtat syringes,
which have to be picked out by a surgeon one by one.
Each one of those sponges, 92 to 93 sponges, you have to actually cut the person open, possibly if it's a small enough
and you have to count
wound.
Them. And during the studies, they. I will tell you, and this is all online for you to read, to stop the hemorrhaging in pigs, which they caused a wound, they had to use between 1 and 8 of those syringes.
8,
to
wow.
stop the hemorrhaging. So, at a worst case scenario, 8 syringes times $430-something, although you can buy 3 for... I think they said they were trying to get it to $1,000. You can buy 3 for $1,000.
Right.
So we have 3 for $1,000, another 3 for $1,000, and let's say you use almost the other 1,000. So we're talking $700 possibly to stop one hemorrhage that could have easily been taken care of with a $35 or $40 Celox gauze and a tourniquet.
Pretty ridiculous.
It is.
Sounds like.
There are only 2 locations that it is FDA cleared to use. You cannot use it on an extremity. So if you carry this, it is not FDA approved for your arms or your legs, only subclavicular.
Subclavicular, under your collarbone.
Or
Or pelvic?
Pelvic. Groin, but right or left side only. I mean, that's the only place you're allowed to use it. That's it. So you still have to carry other products for your extremities or other areas.
Doesn't seem that they would.
And it's even a prescription.
Doesn't seem like they would say anything really positive about it, given the circumstances.
It has never been, to my knowledge, and I do try to keep up on this, it has never been used on a combat victim or any kind of injury on the field. It has, however, been used in an operating room, mm-hmm, under surgical conditions with a patient with anesthesia and a bunch of doctors standing around.
Now, by the way, if there's anybody out there that knows of a circumstance in which this product, X-Stat, has been used in the field, please connect with us at drbonespodcast@aol.com. Because I'd like to know.
I want proof, because I know it hasn't been used. They actually admit that it hasn't been used in field testing yet.
Wow.
In field. So no victim has ever been used. But can you imagine, why would the government spend $1,000 for three of these syringes, which they're not too small?
Yeah.
I mean, so who's going to have the room on themselves to carry it? These guys are already, and gals, are bogged down with so much equipment. They still have to have the same equipment for extremities. So now they're carrying syringes. They mainly carry one or three of them, depending on the cost. Can you imagine three at $1,000 per soldier?
That's amazing.
That's insane. Insane. And then this victim is going to get to the surgical suite, and the military doctor is going to look in there and go, "You've got to be kidding me. What if there's a lot of casualties? What if something big happens?
Who's going to pick out 92 sponges?
And this doctor really needs to quickly go from victim to victim to help save as many lives as possible. And he's got to go 1, 2, 3, 4. I guarantee you that'll happen once. And those doctors are going to call their superiors and say, if you ever bring me a patient with X-Stat here again, you can give them to someone else, because I'm not doing it. I know I would if I was a surgeon. How would you feel about that?
Well,
if you got a bunch of guys lined up that you need to get to,
then
that are all
about somebody,
to die?
Going to be somebody living with some sponges in their belly for a good long time. Wow. Well, how about
sorry,
that?
Sorry, folks.
That is probably not the best. So, but consider C-Lox. C-Lox is an excellent product. Quicklot is good, too. So
yeah,
we have those, too.
And those are officially on the TCCC guidelines. Now, the funny thing is X-Stat, since it's government-sponsored, has actually gotten themselves added to the TCCC guidelines.
Right. Even though they can't point to a lot of infield.
They have none. They have none. They have managed, because of their connections and who paid for their program, they actually got themselves on the guidelines for the junctional wounds. Mm. So you can apply that before you put on the junctional tourniquet.
Well, if you guys
as an
out
option.
There, yep. If you guys out there have some inside dirt you want to share with us, please connect with us. We are very interested in following this story up as
things
progress.
Because we get so many questions about, you know what happens? 2 years happened. 2 years ago, they did a media blitz.
Right.
It was in all the newspapers, on television, in the newspaper, in magazines, as if it was the next coming of, I don't know, the Holy Grail, of like antibiotics. When antibiotics were created, it was as if, you know, that fell from the heavens. And it turns out through research that it really wasn't better than the C-Lox or Quick-Lot products. But however, if you had these two particular spots and that's all you had, that you could use it.
Right. Well, it may be superior in those individual circumstances.
No, that's not what the TCC says.
Oh, not superior.
No, it just happens to be the third option.
Oh, just another option.
Yes.
Okay.
It's
the
third option.
Boy, oh boy.
First is QuickClot. Second is C-Lox. Third is this.
Okay. All right. Well, sounds like something going on there. So, like I said, if you know about it out there, guys,
I sure hope the government doesn't waste their money. Although, I will say, if you have a junctional wound, that is really serious, and you need some sort of hemostat.
Good to have it.
You know.
That's right.
Have something.
Well, I want to talk about something else that I haven't talked about for a while. I haven't talked about antibiotics for a while. Of course, we've talked to you about all the different veterinary equivalent antibiotics that I found years ago, and when I wrote the first article by a doctor on these kinds of bird and fish antibiotics, mm-hmm. it looks like an entire cottage industry has gone up around it, and I think that it's important for us to make sure that every prepper or everybody that's going to be medically responsible should have some antibiotics available. And, you know, I have pretty strict criteria when I look at an antibiotic used in animals that might be useful in humans if the you-know-what hits the fan. We'll talk about what those criteria are in just a little while, but a number of folks have asked me to comment on Clavamox, C-L-A-V-M-O-X, and that's a combination drug in the penicillin family that's used for dogs and cats. In human form, you might know it by the brand name Augmentin, and let me tell you a little bit about it. Augmentin, or Clavamox, are combinations of a penicillin-class antibacterial drug, amoxicillin, and something called a beta-lactamase inhibitor, clavulanic acid that's indicated in the treatment of infections. Beta-lactamase inhibitor, what the heck is that? Well, more in just a minute. Be patient with me. This combination drug works by killing bacteria by not allowing bacteria to synthesize cell walls, which are essentially their skin, their armor. And if they can't synthesize that, if they can't make cell walls, you don't have bacteria. However, this medicine, whether it's just amoxicillin or Augmentin or Clavamox, you know, it's important that just like any antibiotic, it's not going to work for colds, flus, or other virus infections. Remember, viruses are different than antibiotics, than bacteria. The bacteria have an entirely different sort of, microcellular anatomy, and they are different. Antibacterials like amoxicillin or Augmentin or Clavamox will not work against viruses. So I just want to put that out there, and now you can just put that on the shelf and let's talk some more. This is what Augmentin in human form is used for. It's used for lower respiratory tract infections. It's used for ear infections, otitis media. Kids, you know, get otitis media. Sinusitis is very good for that. It's good for skin and skin structure infections like abscesses, boils, things like that. It's good for urinary tract infections, for example, like E. coli infections or Klebsiella, all the common different bacteria that cause that. So makes you wonder why, if when there's amoxicillin, you know, why is there amoxicillin with another drug in it like clavulanic acid? And why would you use that in animals or humans? Because of resistance. We're in the midst of an epidemic of bacterial resistance to a lot of different antibiotics, and this is because many bacteria sometimes destroy parts of an antibiotic's chemical structure. And that's what's happening that's making us want to use these combination antibiotic drugs like Augmentin. Now, part of the core structure of a lot of antibiotic families, including penicillins, including Keflex, cephalosporin-type drugs, is something called a beta-lactam ring. And that's essentially just a chemical chain that's attached to the antibiotic. It's part of the anatomy, chemical anatomy of many, many different antibiotics. So most beta-lactam antibiotics, if you have the beta-lactam ring in your chemical makeup, they work by stopping the cell wall from synthesizing and therefore kills a bacterial organism. Matter of fact, it's so common that these different antibiotics that are beta-lactam, have the beta-lactam ring, a chemical chain on them, are actually the most widely used group of antibiotics. So it's pretty amazing. Until about 2003, more than half of them had the beta-lactam ring. The problem is that bacteria often develop resistance to these beta-lactam antibiotics because they synthesize something called beta-lactamase. And when you see the word, the letters A-S-E after a chemical name, then that means that it's an enzyme. And an enzyme is something that attacks the chemical and denatures it or eliminates it or changes it in some way. And what happens is that this beta-lactamase disrupts the chemical makeup of the antibiotics and renders those antibiotics unable to kill bacteria. So you have to overcome this resistance somehow, this ability of the bacteria to render the antibiotic ineffective, and so therefore they have added something that prevents the beta-lactamase, the enzyme that the bacteria formed, from being able to work, and that is clavulanic acid. And that's really important in a lot of situations, especially where you have resistant bacteria, areas that you have resistant bacteria. There are so many of these different enzymes that destroy beta-lactam rings in these antibiotics, over 1,800 different enzymes that destroy it, that when bacterial populations have these enzymes, the treatment with any beta-lactam antibiotic without clavulanic acid just basically results in the resistant bacteria becoming even more powerful and even more common. So is Clavamox the dog and cat chemical equivalent to Augmentin? Is that an option for your medical storage? I mean, it sounds like it would be great to have some available. It has the beta-lactamase inhibitor, and so therefore it would be good for a number of resistant infections. But to answer that, I have to let you know how I choose a vet drug as acceptable for use in post-apocalyptic settings. The criteria include, one, that the drug has to have only one ingredient, the antibiotic itself, or in this case, the two ingredients that are in it. I mean, in other words, there's nothing in a fish antibiotic, there's nothing that makes your scales shinier. In a bird antibiotic, there's nothing that makes your feathers brighter that's added to it. It's just basically the antibiotic itself. Two, that the drug has to be produced in human dosages. For example, amoxicillin or fishmox is only produced in human dosages, 250 and 500 milligrams. And so it makes you wonder why a guppy really needs the exact same dose and why you just throw a capsule into the aquarium, but you know, many times you won't even see a particular formula for how much you put it into a particular aquarium. I think lately they've come out with saying one capsule per 10 gallons. And people with large aquariums, that ends up being a lot of antibiotic if you wind up putting it in a 50 or 100 gallon aquarium or 200 gallon aquarium. Imagine how much you're using. Three, the veterinary drug has to be identical in appearance to at least one pharmaceutical company's version of the human antibiotic, down to the identification numbers on the capsules. So Fishmox Forte, for example, the 500 milligram version, is a red and pink capsule with numbers and letters WC731 on it. The human amoxicillin made by Deva Pharmaceuticals is a red and pink capsule with the numbers and letters WC731 on it. In other words, identical in appearance, clearly the exact same medication, manufactured in the exact same place and just repackaged for the pet market. And of course, four, which is the most important thing for preppers, is the drug has to be available without a prescription and without limit to the amount that you can purchase to stockpile. So let's go over these criteria with Clavamox. Now, Clavamox, number one, does meet my criteria in that other than amoxicillin and clavulanic acid, there is nothing else in it. Matter of fact, it contains the exact even form of amoxicillin, amoxicillin trihydrate, and clavulanate potassium that you see in Augmentin in the human version. Nothing else, just like you see in Augmentin for humans. However, two, when you get to two, the drug must be produced in human dosages. Clavamox is produced in dosages that can be used on humans, but it's also produced in a lot of other dosages. There are not a lot of cats and dogs that are the size of an adult human, and so therefore they have a lot of very small dosages. Like some dosages, like the 62.5 milligrams is meant for a dog or cat that weighs about 10 pounds, and then ranges all the way up to 1,000 milligram tablets. Although the veterinary version, I think, only goes up to about 400. Now, because of all these different dosages, it causes a lot of confusion. So I would say this really doesn't meet my criteria unless you really know what you're doing around medicines and drugs. So that's something that's important to know. Now, three, the drug has to be identical in appearance. Well, it does have some, Clavamox does have some dosages that do look very similar to the human version. So I'm believe that some versions of Clavamox may be the same as a human augmentin or just repackaged, but some others look very different, like the Clavamox 250 milligrams is shaped like a round tablet, and the other one is oblong. The augmentin in the same dosage is oblong. So I'm still looking for a human amoxicillin, augmentin, that matches what the dog Clavamox looks like. So for me right now, that's a swing and a miss, but I'm going to continue looking and see what I can find. Now, the usual dose of augmentin is about one 500 milligram tablet every 12 hours or one 250 milligram tablet every 8 hours. Now, of course, that's a lot more than you give your dog. If you think of it, 6.25 milligrams per pound of dog. So 500 milligrams is it's a pretty darn dog, unless you have a Great Dane. So Clavamox really doesn't come in dosages that would be very useful for humans. They come in very low dosages, very small dosages. And indeed, augmentin even comes in higher dosages, all the way up to 1,000 milligrams. One common dose is 875 milligram tablets. And that's every 12 hours, not even once a day. That's way more than a dog would need. And so that makes things more complex, makes it more difficult to be able to use something like Clavamox or augmentin. Other complexities regarding the antibiotic is that two 250 tablets of augmentin can't be substituted for one 500 milligram tablet of augmentin, because both the 250 and the 500 milligram tablets contain the same amount of clavulanic acid, 125 milligrams. And so therefore the two 250 milligram tablets would be sort of an overdose on clavulanic acid, whereas the 500 milligram would have really half the dose of clavulanic acid of two 250 milligram tablets. And on top of that, the chewable versus the regular tablet also have this peculiarity. Wow, man, I cannot. Blah.
You almost got it.
Peculiarity, and it is pretty strange, really. The dosage, another thing that bothers me is the dosage for dogs versus human infants also uses different formulas. 6.25 milligrams per pound of dog for Clavamox, and augmentin 30 milligrams per 2.2 pounds or kilogram per day divided every 12 hours for humans. Not exactly the same, a little bit higher amount than that it would be seen for use in dogs, a little bit higher, not exactly the same. So overall, it's a confusing set of conditions that makes Clavamox a little less than a reasonable choice for the survival medic. I mean, I guess any port in a storm, but the truth of the matter is that this port doesn't even exist. Remember, my fourth criteria is that you can get it without a prescription. And on 1-800-PetMeds.com or Pet360 or any of a number of other sites I checked out, it states that Clavamox requires a prescription from your veterinarian, and is sold by the tablet, sold as oral drops, all sorts of crazy ways to get it. That doesn't mean you might not find it somewhere else without a prescription. Sometimes people find lidocaine, for example, a prescription drug, without a prescription on some of these sites, but it fails this criteria by not being widely available like the other vet antibiotics that I talk about. Now, it's important to know that, by the way, whatever antibiotics you have in your medical storage, they must be used very wisely. They are not gummy bears. They're real pharmaceuticals that have real effects, good ones on the infections they work for, but also side effects that aren't so good. For example, augmentin, amoxicillin with clavulanic acid, it has side effects that include abdominal pain, bloating, diarrhea, gas, headaches, heartburn, nausea, vomiting. Oh boy, some people even get easy bruising, other people get rashes, allergic reactions. Sometimes you can even get hepatitis from it, a reversible form of it, but still a big issue. You have to remember that antibiotics also alter the normal bacteria of the colon and encourage overgrowth of some bacteria, such as Clostridium difficile, which causes something called pseudomembranous colitis, an inflammation of the colon that can be very, very dangerous. So there are a lot of different issues that you'll see that cause some concern. Clavamox, unfortunately, probably not an option for your storage, not as much certainly as a lot of the other medicines from which I about which I talk. So there's that. Now let's talk a little bit about infectious diseases and the deaths that they cause, and what's the deal with regards to dead bodies. You know, there are lots of different types of disasters that can befall a community, certainly. Always a concern that a catastrophe will have a lot of casualties, and if the number of dead are very high, the assumption that a lot of people make is that an epidemic of infectious disease has to follow. Now, you might be surprised to know that this is rarely the case in natural disasters. Pretty surprising because of the issues that you would think that dead bodies could cause. Now, we've had epidemics with large numbers of concentrated fatalities, like Ebola in West Africa in 2014. Of course, most of what we consider to be a mass casualty event falls in the category of natural disaster. Maybe weather events like, tornadoes, hurricanes, floods, blizzards, heat waves, all sorts of other things. I mean, the Ebola epidemic, that was essentially a man-made disaster, if you think about it, because it was thought to have originated by the consumption of improperly cooked bush meat. If they had cooked their fruit bats in an appropriate manner...
I'm sick.
They might not have...
And I can't hardly eat, yeah. And you are just totally knocking out any possibility that I'm even going near, like, even chicken noodle soup, honey. Oh, my God.
Now, in some circumstances, in some circumstances like that with Ebola and maybe some other epidemic diseases like cholera, dead bodies associated with those can certainly pose a risk for infection. But natural disaster deaths, they're mostly caused by, well, traumatic injury, could be caused by drowning. And according to the Pan American Journal of Public Health, there's not a lot of evidence that dead bodies following natural disasters pose a significant epidemic risk as long as you deal with them. Now, when infectious disease does rear its ugly head after a natural disaster, interestingly enough, the human remains are less likely to cause it than the living humans that survived the event. I mean, because you can figure out that these folks are in crowded, they're probably in unsanitary, austere conditions, sterilization of water, proper preparation of food, that's a challenge and these kinds of circumstances, and of course that could lead to the rapid transmission of all sorts of diseases, especially diarrheal diseases, and that leads to more contamination, and oh boy, what a mess. Well, the mass management of dead bodies is often based on the belief that they have to be burned or buried immediately to prevent an epidemic. And this is, according to the World Health Organization, not true. And it's opposite to what was recommended in West Africa, for example. In West Africa, they wanted to cremate the bodies. According to the World Health Organization, burial is preferable to cremation in mass casualty situations. Now, why is that, you might wonder? Well, one thing is it takes a lot of wood to cremate a body, if you think about it. I'm looking at it here, and according to the World Health Organization document, it takes about 300 kilograms of wood, wow, to actually cremate one body.
That is 300
kilograms of wood. And of course, you can imagine all the smoke caused by it. So certainly from an OPSEC standpoint, from an operational security standpoint, you know, that would be a big issue.
You could wipe down a lot of trees if you had a lot of
dead bodies.
Yeah.
If you're going to cremate all of them. World Health Organization also says that you should bury people individually. You should have the graves be 1.5 meters above the water table, which is a shame for us because we don't have 1.5 meters to get to the water table. We have about 18 inches.
We would have to make burial mounds like the Indians did.
Yes, burial mounds.
That's what we'd have to do.
Or if you go to places like New Orleans or other places like that, you'll see that a lot of the old burial grounds are very much
concrete
above
mausoleums.
Yes,
exactly.
Above ground, right. So that would be something pretty impressive there. Also, they recommend that you have at least a meter of dirt over the body. Other important principles, according to the World Health Organization, include give priority to the living over the dead. I agree. Dispel myths about health risks posed by corpses. You're going to need to do that if you're going to have a team of people that are going to be dealing with them, certainly. Identify and tag corpses. Provide appropriate mortuary services. Reject unceremonious and mass disposal of unidentified corpses. You know what this is? This is most likely, and says you respond to the wishes of the family, respect cultural differences, religious observances. The truth of the matter is that this is not for a true apocalyptic setting. This is really mostly for the feelings of the family members more than anything else. I mean,
yeah, respecting what they choose to do.
But the problem is that there are going to be circumstances where there may be so many casualties that you cannot do
You're
that. And you have to deal with things just because of the sheer volume of dead bodies. It's
well, I'll tell you, when you know, you watch these movies and these series that have great numbers of deaths, it's a rare occasion that you actually see anyone getting buried.
Right.
They pretty much
at
leave,
all.
At all. They pretty much just walk away, which is horrible. But if you know somebody passes away within your vicinity and it's where you live, that's when you're going to have to do this burial. But if you're on your travels and you need to get out of Dodge and you need to keep going, there's probably not going to be a lot of time that you're going to stop unless they're or very close to you and you have a safe amount of time to do this, to stop and bury. You may have to just keep going.
Right.
You know, that sounds like a scary situation. I hope nobody is ever in that situation, but you may have to make a choice of keeping the group safe and keep them moving versus stopping to bury someone that you guys cared about.
Exactly.
And doing it in a way that respects that person and honors that person and that everyone feels as good as possible that they've done the ceremony that is important to their religious beliefs.
Well, I'm looking here and it says that cremations and burial should always be done at least 500 meters or 500 yards or so downwind of dwellings, and of course any burial should be about 200 feet or so from groundwater drinking sources. So,
which makes perfect sense.
So this is, I think, a pretty important guideline here. And we'll talk a little bit more about specific guidelines for workers that have to deal with dead bodies. We'll talk about that next time. Plus, we'll talk about what has happened in the United States over the course of time, how many deaths are occurring from what type of natural disaster or man-made disaster over the course of, let's say, a couple of decades, and see basically what are the things that are indeed most deadly in the United States. I think you'd be surprised by the answer. So we'll do that next time. Hey, you know, we are members of the Expert Council for Jack Spirko's popular survival podcast, and we oftentimes get that I think our audience here would benefit from. Here's a question from a young man who's taking his wife and young son to a Zika epidemic country, asking for my opinion. This week's question for the Expert Council comes from Kevin, who writes, I'm planning to travel to St. George's Cay Resort, Belize, at the end of June, along with my wife and six-month child. The CDC recommends taking level 2 precautions to prevent the transmission of Zika, which I can get off their website. The recommendation is not Zika, of course. My sister is getting married in Belize at the resort. Currently, my wife and I are planning on going, bringing our six-month-old son. She's currently breastfeeding him, so leaving him at home is not much of an option. I could travel alone, but I would prefer to bring my wife and son, obviously. They have recommendations above and beyond what the CDC recommends. Should I even consider traveling to Belize, given the recent advent of the Zika virus? If you feel that purchasing your book, The Zika Virus Handbook, indeed, I wrote a book called The Zika Virus Handbook, that would help me be more informed, I will do it. Well, thanks, Kevin. I appreciate that. Let's talk a little bit about your question and your specific situation. Kevin, according to the CDC, the Aedes mosquito has populations in Belize, a Central American country formerly known as British Honduras, and it's thought to be currently spreading the disease. You don't hear much about Zika lately, but it's still causing trouble in places like Brazil, where babies are still being born with abnormally small heads, a condition called microcephaly, and other problems. You mentioned the CDC recommendations, and let's go over those a little bit. The CDC recommends the following to prevent Zika transmission. They are, first and foremost, that you shouldn't travel there if you or your wife are contemplating becoming pregnant anytime in the near future. For women, it's 8 weeks at least. For men, it's 6 months or more. You didn't mention future plans for your family, so I wanted to mention that. That is indeed a factor. You did mention the CDC instructions on Zika. These are good advice. There's no vaccine or medicine for Zika, so you can protect yourself somewhat by preventing mosquito bites, right? Cover exposed skin by wearing long-sleeve shirts, long-sleeve pants. Use EPA-registered insect repellents, including DEET, oil of lemon eucalyptus, picaridin, IR-3535, and always use them as directed. By the way, pregnant and breastfeeding women can use these EPA-registered insect repellents, including DEET, by the way. Most repellents, including DEET, can be used on children older than 2 months, and so that's important in your situation. The only one that may not be a good idea is the oil of lemon eucalyptus. That's best in kids over 3 years. Use permethrin-treated clothing and gear, such as boots, pants, socks, and tents. You can use pre-treated clothing. They actually have clothing pre-treated with this stuff, permethrin, P-E-R-M-E-T-H-R-I-N, or treat your clothing yourself. Now, stay in places that have air conditioning and window and door screens to keep mosquitoes outside. I assume that this place would be having those amenities. And sleep under a mosquito bed net if air conditioner screen rooms aren't available. And by the way, mosquito netting is probably a pretty good idea in any case. They certainly can be used to cover babies that are young. Think babies that are in like strollers, and certainly cover the crib with it so that they are protected as much as possible from mosquito bites. And remember that Zika can be spread by sexual contact. If you have sex, just about any type, while traveling, you should use condoms. There isn't any hard data to show that Zika virus can affect the brain of six-month-old infants that weren't previously infected, but it has been shown to continue causing damage in infants that were infected as fetuses. We still have so much to learn about the Zika virus that my general recommendation to you, Kevin, and the rest of the Survival Podcast family is to see America first. There's Zika, but there's also a lot of other tropical diseases in Central America. If you must go, however, follow the CDC guidelines to the letter and invest in some mosquito netting to take to cover the baby's crib and stroller. Don't forget the mosquito repellent for children. Apply it to your hands first and then to the baby. This is especially important with regards to the face. Mosquito repellent, remember, goes over the sunscreen. Allow the sunscreen 15 minutes to absorb first. That's it for this week. Thanks so much for listening to the Survival Medicine Hour with Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy Jo Alden, MD, and Amy Alden, ARMP. We'll be back next time.
Are you worried about how dangerous the world has become? In these days of terrorist attacks, natural disasters, or even a future collapse, you need to be medically prepared to keep your family safe. I'm Amy Alton, ARNP. of store.doomandbloom.net, where you'll find an entire line of uniquely designed medical kits and supplies for when help is not on the way. For everything from individual first aid kits to the ultimate family medical bag, go to store.doomandbloom.net today. You'll be glad you did.